Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Isn't this a sports show?
Papa, tell me about the radio days.
Oh, well, there were many, many struggles and many difficulties.
Almost entirely.
I remember hearing this one radio show where they did nothing but visual gags on an audio medium. The host did a whole segment with his nose taped to his forehead.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Papa, whatever happened to him?
Son, I don't think you're ready for that story. All I can tell you is don't do cocaine.
Too late, Papa. I learned it from watching you.
Take the show with you by listening on the Sports Radio 810 mobile app at 810WHB.com or by searching for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts.
You did this to me, Papa. I just wanted to be like you, Papa.
This is Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810WHB.
I got a whole new box of party poppers. Woo! Oh, boy, that went over the plexiglass.
Wow, that was loud.
Rudy's
had a pop.
Yeah, it wasn't a dud, but none of the confetti really spread out any.
No, but it popped.
And it smells like gunpowder in the studio, so you know it's the first show after a Chiefs victory. I guess it's been I haven't done one of these shows in a little bit because of assorted vacation plans and whatnot. I'll tell you what, if you missed me last couple of months, we've been very touch and go. That will not be the case the rest of this week. I'm going to be all over this radio station the rest of the week. And we got Almost Entirely Sports with you for you 3 hours tonight and tomorrow. And just so much to talk about, so many things crammed into this episode, and the studio smells like gunpowder.
I honestly don't remember the last time it was me and you both in studio and like the equipment worked, because like we have Facebook.
Oh yeah,
Live
Facebook
well.
Has been yeah. yes. I'm glad you mentioned
it's like
that.
All normal, like
yeah,
or as normal as it has been since March.
Yeah, no, that's actually true. It's the first time it's been at least sort of yeah. There's still the plexiglass. This is still
sort of not
normal, but it was normal
still
for
down,
a while.
Still down a man. He's still missing in action. We'll find him.
We're gonna find him for at least an hour tonight. We're gonna find him. So here's a series of things going on. One, good call, Rudy. The Facebook Live is back up and working again, so you can watch the show and leave your comments there. It's probably the easiest way to communicate directly with us. I think Rudy will probably keep an eye on that over the course of the show. I might even venture into the comment section.
I might meander
into the comment section, but we'll see those. You can watch the show there at the, if you're listening, the Sports Radio 810 WHB Facebook page. I believe it's also cross-posted over to the Almost Entirely Sports Facebook page, but certainly a bigger reach over on the 810 one, and we got other all sorts of great stuff on the 810 Facebook page, so I would encourage you to check it out.
It's not, but it will be.
Well, there you go.
It will be cross-posted.
That's fine.
A little rusty on the Facebook.
That's
all
right.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute. We're out of practice. I forgot to turn the heat down in the studio before we started doing the show, and I am a little toasty in here at this moment. We will have Seth Kaiser of The Athletic and the Chief of the North newsletter because the Times Ours podcast that just celebrated its 100th episode. That went up today. I will say this box of Party Popper.
Boop. It's an empty one.
It is an empty one, but you did the visual for it, which was pretty satisfying. This box of Party Poppers was actually cracked into yesterday because I did bring some celebratory Party Poppers for that. But we'll talk to Seth not just about 100 episodes of that show, but about the Chiefs' victory over the Raiders. Well, sad Raiders fans on Reddit, which had to be really sad. Do you have that? Have you received the file, Rudy? Because Beard said he was working on it, but I haven't seen it.
I actually haven't got it. I guess so. I normally
is it up on the podcast feed already?
He normally does not give it to me. It's normally on the podcast feed. I will check the podcast.
I hadn't
feed.
Seen it yet, though. So maybe Hey, Rudy, maybe check in on Beards of Sad Fans situation.
I don't see it.
Maybe check in and see what he's thinking there. Maybe he's going to come do it in studio. Maybe he'll do it live, and we'll just have to bleep him out a cappella. I don't know. But Beards is coming in not just for Sad Fans tonight, but also because I have a very special Thanksgiving taste test. I don't know if it will go quite as dramatically as the last one that we did, which was soda-themed, and Beards went and barfed off the balcony. Do you remember which one got him, Rudy? There were at least, I remember ranch, mustard, and dirt flavored sodas. I feel like there was one other one other than the root beer. Oh, there was like the bird's nest soup one.
Yeah, bird's nest soup.
I think those were the four.
Which I don't, honestly, like, I remember bird's nest soup not being like that bad.
It was not that bad.
The dirt, so, which, but I do think it is what did Beards in because it was like kind of slimy
there
feeling.
There were some
but the dirt issues, soda yeah. one that just... Did, that was
they were all bad.
Bad.
The ones that I have, the thing that I have here that I'll reveal whenever Beards gets here, neither of you guys know what it is yet. In fact, my mother found it and sent it to me. It's something that's like sold in stores. I told Beards, and I'll make this the tease, and then we'll talk a bunch of Chiefs Raiders, both with Seth and throughout this first hour. But I told you guys... It's more in the vein of the Sour Patch Kids Chips Ahoy cookies that we tried than dirt soda. And I think that sort of comparison will make sense as we venture into the taste territory.
Because it's more of a like, normal food combination that you would expect instead of like dirt and soda, which is
well,
not expected.
It's more normal than dirt and soda and less normal than candy and cookie, for sure. It's going to be a trip. We'll get there. But we'll do that next hour. Also, maybe we'll talk some NBA stuff with Beards because his basketball team is collapsing.
Is that a dirt cookie?
It is. It's actually just a handful of dirt from outside that I put in the oven for an hour, which made it real crispy.
I mean, that's basically like that's what we made as kids. I've eaten like 20 of those in my lifetime.
Really? You think 20, you think?
Yeah, you're right. That's a pretty low number.
Yeah, I think you're a 50 dirt pie guy minimum.
Easy.
Yeah. But Beards' basketball team is collapsing. Mine is rising like a phoenix, and Rudy's Nuggets are fine.
Did you see the new meme? It was a Suns meme, and it's
I'm gonna need more specifics.
Very good.
Than that,
it's a
I think.
Picture of Chris Paul next to Devin Booker, and you know who they look like? I mean, obviously, Chris Paul
like
looks a lot like the fake Chris Paul in the State Farm commercials.
Sure.
But you know who Devin Booker looks a lot
like? Does he look like Patrick Mahomes?
No, he looks
okay,
like
I'm
the
confused.
Jack State Farm
guy. Oh, he looks like the State Farm guy.
He looks
oh, that's
just
funny.
Like the new State Farm
sure.
guy. So, like, this is why this happened.
Yeah.
It's all a marketing ploy.
They're the name brand fake Chris Paul and Jake from State Farm. It's
so
just real Chris Paul
Devin
and Devin Booker.
Booker is going to be the fake State Farm guy now. That commercial's coming where you have Chris Paul and the State Farm guy and
yeah.
there's fake Chris Paul. The commercials come where Devin Booker's in there trying to act like Chris Paul's State Farm agent, and Chris Paul's just like, "No, man, you're the fake guy."
I'm good with that.
That commercial's coming.
I'm here for that.
And if it's not State Farm, you're welcome.
You know what else is coming? Playoff runs for the Phoenix Suns. Most importantly, though, right now on my TV, NFL Network is re-airing the Sunday Night Football Chiefs-Raiders game. And I'm excited pretty much just for the last 2 minutes again because everything else was sort of a little bit stressful in its various forms. But that last drive was obviously a thing of beauty. And it's where the show begins in earnest here tonight. Again, we'll talk about it with Seth at 10. But there are positives and negatives here. There are a lot of things where you can look and say, like, oh, wow, the defense really didn't play better than they did whenever they got pretty well throttled against the Raiders by the Raiders the first time. Derek Carr against the Chiefs is like a fundamentally different quarterback than normal Derek Carr. All of that remains true, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about, I was going to say the pass rush in the secondary, but what I really mean is the defense. I mean, the linebackers are also not particularly good. We'll talk about the defense soon and probably more than we'll talk about the offense tonight because that's kind of, you know, the thing to talk about, the thing to work on is the thing that's not performing at as high a level. But I mentioned this on the postgame show, Sports Radio 810, WHB postgame show presented by CBD American Shaman and Missouri Lottery every week right after the game, hosted by yours truly. I mentioned this on the postgame show. And I think I've said it on this show before whenever games have had somewhat similar endings from the Chiefs, wherever you have that moment at the end. But I think I'm just going to repeat myself on this every time it happens, because I imagine that a lot of you have felt similar things to what I'm about to describe. And I want all of us to remember how we have felt and how we feel now watching this football team. What I think back to, and I was thinking about it before the Chiefs' last drive against the Raiders, I think back to the times that I would be, and I have a weirdly, like, sort of piercing memory of this setting and feeling in a way that I don't usually have for a lot of things. I remember this feeling so well, where for me, I mean, you know, I was probably 13, 14 years old. So as Beard said on the postgame show two or three years ago, he said it better, actually. I bleeped it up. But I remember watching, you know, I would have to go back and look to figure out who the quarterback actually was. But I remember watching, let's just say, Brody Croyle or Damon Heward or Matt Castle or any of the other guys. Give me a Tyler, either of them. Give me a Thigpen or a Palko. I would prefer Thigpen. Oh, wow, there were three Tylers.
I know, I forgot about Palko for a second.
Tyler Bray never actually, he never caused me this sort of harm.
Tyler Bray did good things for the Chiefs. He's the reason why Patrick Mahomes got his first come from behind, like, win.
That's actually true.
If that's not worthy of...
That's his legacy.
You know, put him in the ring of honor, like, I don't know what else is.
No, that's a great point. But I remember watching so many games with one of those sort of, you know, carousels of quarterbacks. And they would play a game at noon that we would only see in Kansas City, because that kind of product did not need to be inflicted on, you know, any other market. But they would just lose to the Bills or... Really, I just think about the Bills a lot. I don't know why. They would lose to the Bills or the Steelers or the Ravens or any divisional team, really.
The Bills are a good one because the Bills were also not a great team back
right,
then.
Right, they're perfect
felt
for this
like,
space.
Oh, we can win this game, and
you know,
then somehow they would lose.
You
it.
Know what? At least they'll beat the Bills next week after they lost to the Patriots the week before. No, they'll just lose to the Bills. And you watch that game, and for me, I would watch that game, and then I would, like, go outside and play a game or something, and then come back in and watch Sunday Night Football that night. And then that night, on Sunday Night Football, Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or later on Aaron Rodgers would do some absolutely bonkers witchcraft thing where all I could think about in those moments was like, wow, that's amazing. And my goodness, how cool must it be to have a quarterback on your team that makes you feel like that, that makes you expect that sort of ending to a game, that makes your entire team feel tangibly cooler. Excuse me, I'm a little phlegmy. I'm choked up. Just thinking about it. Think about how far we've come. I remember watching, you know, Packers games. What was it, 2013, that his gold standard year? I'm trying to remember. There was the year that that Aaron Rodgers was just perfect. Like, it was just, it might be the best anyone's ever played quarterback.
Yeah, because
I think it's 2013.
Because I think he was the Super Bowl MVP in like 10 or 11. Then he won the MVP himself in like 13. That was the year that he was like crazy, crazy.
They were also 14-1 in 2011. So, yeah, whatever. But I remember one of those years when Aaron Rodgers was really being Aaron Rodgers. Just the peak, absolute, just unstoppable cyborg. I remember having the thought of, like, the Chiefs and Packers have basically the same uniforms. They just have, the colors are just different. But the Packers' uniforms are so much cooler. And the reason they were cooler is because they were being worn by Aaron Rodgers. they were in commercials or the team you'd want to play on in Madden, or the thing that would be in prime time where they would take a team like the Chiefs and remind you how far you had to go. And now all of those things that I remember thinking about the early 2010s Packers are things that are going to be spent torturing fans of other fan bases in the 2020s. And it's already there. I mean, the overall feel of the Chiefs organization, it's grown in degrees, right? There was, you know, how did it feel by the end with Todd Haley and Scott Pioli and Matt Cassel? Bad. It was bad. That's right. Then red and gold was ketchup and mustard, and they played 14 noon games and one afternoon game and a Thursday night football game. And you had Jamal Charles made it look cool, but everything Derek Johnson made it look cool, but God, everything else around it. Well, then you have Andy Reid come to town and Alex Smith. And it's a rehab process at that point. And you know, I think there's a time in there where it was probably I think I really started watching football probably right towards kind of the tail end of Trent Green and kind of, you know, so people, you can talk about Marty Schottenheimer, but it's not I am, as unfortunate as it may be, more acquainted with Romeo Crennel, Todd Haley, Charlie White, that kind of those coaching staffs.
I was going to say, Marty Schottenheimer, to me, is a Chargers coach.
Like, yeah.
I remember Marty Schottenheimer, the Chargers coach. I know I was at a Chiefs game in which he was the head coach of the Chiefs, but like my real memory when I started watching the NFL.
Herm Edwards was on the sideline for me, I think.
Marty is with the Chargers, and, you know, Philip Rivers and Drew Brees are just essentially getting started.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get it, but it's not. In fact, I was trying to see what specific years he was in. And, like, that's something that lots of people are going, how do you not know? Because
Dick Vermeil was my first Chiefs coach.
Got to go first and last name there. Really important that you really get that last name there. You're right. No, Dick Vermeil's a great call.
Because he was.
That's right.
You know, he's the Trent Green, the Trent Green area. It was him. I remember Al Saunders was the OC, and Greg Robinson was the DC for 1 year, and I only remember him for a couple years, because my dad just hated him. Like,
that's good.
Just
that's some good energy to have.
Hated the man, and then he eventually went on to be a head coach of Syracuse. I remember that, but that's the only reason why. That's the only defensive coordinator under the like first staff that I can remember.
But I was like four whenever Marty had his last year here. So yeah, but you're right. Dick Vermeil's a great call, and then it's kind of the Herm, Haley,
that
Romeo
splash. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's probably fair to say that the Dick Vermeil and Trent Green kind of years, you had a little, it wasn't, you weren't a laugh, you certainly were not a joke. You were certainly not a laughing stock. The Chiefs had a lot of those issues, 2000, late, kind of mid, late 2000s, early 10s. Andy Reid and Alex Smith at least got you back to the Trent Green, Dick Vermeil, back to the Marty Schottenheimer era of like, well, we have a real coach and a real quarterback, but it's still not the thing that those damn Packers have had for my entire life. Because before it was Rodgers, it was Brett Favre. And then even Brett Favre took with them to the Jets for a minute. Into the Vikings, it was like, well, I don't know, his hand was swollen and purple at the end, but gosh dang it, it was Brett Favre. Watching, I mean, and this has happened so many times. It happened in the damn Super Bowl. It obviously happened against the Texans and against the Titans in the playoffs. It happened in some ways throughout 2018. You know, it happened in a loss against the Rams where it didn't fully land. We've known that Patrick Mahomes is Aaron Rodgers and not Trent Green or Alex Smith or whatever. You know, he is finishing games like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady at that kind of clip where you are genuinely having conversations about not scoring too fast before you give them the ball back. that's not a real conversation you have for really good quarterbacks like Alex Smith or, you know, Kirk Cousins or honestly Derek Carr. Really good quarterbacks, you think, all right, we're just gonna score. Unless you're the Falcons, just score. Because if you're the Falcons, your defense makes everybody else Aaron Rodgers.
For the Chargers, it doesn't matter because it's just all going to end horribly anyway.
Right, literally, it's just you're just
nothing matters.
Just the LA nihilists at that point. Nothing matters. Like, no, at that point, do whatever you want. It couldn't.
You've scored with 1 second left on the clock. Great, they're going to return this for a touchdown.
This squibbed kickoff is being run back by the fullback because you're the Chargers. And it wasn't Philip Rivers, and it was Philip Rivers. It's like right now we're looking at the Bucks and Patriots, and we're like, oh, wow, you know what, really? Shockingly, I think it really was both Tom Brady and Bill Belichick that kind of made that greatness. We're looking at the Chargers and going, oh, it was the Chargers and Philip Rivers. They both have, you know, although Philip Rivers got some good luck for the first time in his NFL career this weekend. But we've known where Patrick Mahomes has been headed, and we've seen it. It's not even headed there. He won the MVP, and then he won Super Bowl MVP. Sunday night's game was nothing new, but it was another one of those moments that time and time and time again is reinforcing something that I just never really thought the Chiefs were going to have. I mean, there was a friend of mine, I remember we were, again, probably around the same time, just having like a legit sort of, you know, 15-year-old existential conversation of, do you think the Chiefs are ever going to win a Super Bowl in our lives? And he would say no because he, you know, thinks everything is always going to end horribly. And I would say, yeah, because our lives are probably pretty long and weird things happen. It might be 50 more years. They might be the Cubs. But yeah, probably. And this, I remember still, maybe because it happened more recently, and also maybe because I was less exhausted. I remember the show we did after Patrick Mahomes signed his $500 million contract better than I remember the show we did after the Super Bowl. I remember the post-game Super Bowl show pretty well until about 4 a.m. and things get really hazy. But the thing about whenever he signed the $500 million deal was like Kansas City has LeBron in the sport that's more popular in America than LeBron's sport. They have the guy that changes all of the math. And they have the right coach for him. Like, the ideal coach. The Chiefs would win the AFC West with Matt Patricia, but they should win Super Bowls, plural, with Andy Reid. Patrick Mahomes would probably win an MVP with Nick Kizer, Deion Yelder, and Ricky Seals-Jones at tight end, taking Travis Kelce out of the equation. But he's got Travis Kelce, and the chemistry those guys have is unbelievable. I just don't think we've ever seen anything like that in NFL history. And I don't think I'm being a prisoner of the moment there. I'm not saying even it's the best duo in NFL history. It's frankly too soon to say that. But the number of times where Patrick Mahomes is just sprinting left after 4 seconds of trying to buy time in the pocket, and then all of a sudden Travis Kelce is dragging his toes with his hands exactly where the ball ends up being because they've telepathically communicated that's what's going to happen there. I don't know how they could be more efficient if they literally could telepathically communicate. I don't. It seems if there's some great scandal around the Chiefs in a decade for the 30 for 30 in 10 years, it's going to be that Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce wore like a complex series of buzzers where Patrick Mahomes could like tap his foot 3 times and then Kelce would get buzzed 3 times and he'd know he needs to go to the left sideline at that point. And that would honestly, that would make more sense than what they actually do. It's unbelievable.
Buzzgate.
A little buzzgate. Which also might just be, what do we ever try to call the Astros thing that? If Travis Kelce,
I don't think we gave that a gate because I do think we probably do just say that strictly for the Patriots. Typically,
that's probably right. If Travis Kelce ever has a bad tattoo that he's trying to cover up allegedly, we'll know. But like that would make as much sense. That would make as much sense as what actually happens, which is, oh yeah, they just know. What? How?
Yeah, and it's, you know, they mentioned it during the broadcast, and there are things that, like, make sense on why they would have, say, better chemistry than normal. I mean, one, they've been with each other for a while now, but, you know, the fact that Travis Kelce did grow up playing quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I do think he has
also,
a little, right,
he has like more career time with Alex Smith, by the way.
That's
He's
true.
Caught more
yeah.
passes from Alex Smith than Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
They're not even in their final form.
It's one of those weird things where it's like, I don't think it's all to this, but like having like that extra little bit of just knowledge of, hey, if I was a quarterback, this is what I would do. And maybe, and honestly, it may just come down to the personalities being pretty similar, to the sense that he is thinking to himself,
yeah,
what if I was a quarterback, what would
yeah.
I do? And it just so happens there's a little bit of this, it's probably kind of similar to what Mahomes would do, because there is they kind of all have a pretty similar personality. Like, it is weird, like I remember hearing Deion Sanders on a podcast talk about how, you know, like, players don't really, like, you know, especially defense and offense, don't communicate a lot together. And even players, like, within defense, like, defensive backs don't necessarily hang out with defensive linemen. And, like,
right.
So you get a lot of, like, positions to kind of stick with positions. But especially with this offense, with this team, like, there really is this weird, like, where it does seem like Mahomes, Kelce, Hill, like, all these guys spend so much time with each other. Just, like, they're closer than what others are, that they just, again, they just know what each other's thinking at every given moment, and it's wild.
It's incredible. I think the one thing that beyond that, or that I would add to that, is that at least Mahomes and Kelce, maybe the most, and I think Hill
for
knows.
Sure.
I think Watkins knows. But everyone in that offense, especially Mahomes and Kelce, though, know what the plan is. Whenever the defense dictates a certain thing, you pivot to this thing. But then Kelce sees that it's a broken play, and he's reading what Mahomes wants. Yeah, it's bonkers. But that's to me what has to be the biggest takeaway of all of the games like this, is that the Chiefs are playing with a different set of rules, with a different quarterback. Derek Carr was really, really good. There's a clip going on Twitter right now where Chris Jones gets pressure, he like beats a double team, he's in Derek Carr's face, and he's just like falling and sidearm whips this ball that Nelson Agholor dives for and should have absolutely caught. Whenever you see it, it's a play. Patrick Mahomes probably would have bailed out of the pocket and made the play. But it's a play where if you saw Patrick Mahomes do that, you'd be like, wow, that's a great Patrick Mahomes style play.
Derek Carr made some Mahomes-type plays.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, he can't now. And the reason why he's not like Patrick Mahomes, he doesn't do it every game. He
Correct.
Just seems to only be able to do it against Chiefs.
The 2020 Chiefs make him Patrick Mahomes. I don't get it.
Just even like essentially the lob pass that he had where I think it was probably Chris Jones again, whoever was getting
mm-hmm.
pressure on him, and he just immediately just chucks this ball what looked like 40 yards or 40 feet up in the air.
Yep.
And the running back going catcher was like 2 yards down the field, but it was just like everything about it was just so perfect. You're like, that's the type of play Mahomes would make where you're like, how do you see that even?
And the Chiefs offense beat that.
Yes.
They didn't just beat an offense that couldn't quite get things going. So we'll talk about the defense plenty. But I mean, we have a liner from probably very early 2018, but now that I say it, Rudy will play it when we come back. Where I just say, if you start today by talking about the Chiefs' defense, you're doing it wrong. This feels like another example of that, because I don't want the smudge on the world's most beautiful painting to be the first thing we say about the painting. Maybe we're just so used to having this beautiful piece of art that we're already going, you know what? Why isn't Mona Lisa smiling a little more? I don't get it. It's still that I think it still demands our attention in a meaningful way. The other element of it, by the way, And it's the reason that, you know, you could say, okay, great, Josh, I get it. Patrick Mahomes is great. The offense is great. And if you, I think if you feel that way, you kind of are missing the point of, like, it's so hard to be able to say stuff like that that confidently about anything in the NFL.
It's special. It's not great. It's,
yeah.
It's truly special. Like, I imagine this is what it was like at first, like when Rams fans were watching, you know, like Kurt Warner and those guys. Like, they have this collection of talent of all these, like, again, potential Hall of Famers. It's just every,
Patrick Mahomes is like 400% Kurt Warner.
Absolutely. I just mean like in spur, like at that time, because the NFL is just way different back then. Just these different moments throughout history where everything just comes together so perfectly.
I just don't know how many.
Just maximize that.
I just don't know if there are that many times where you can say this is what it's like that thing, because even Aaron Rodgers' best years, I don't feel like he had the ideal supporting cast.
No. That's what I mean. Like,
there's
happens.
there's just not anything really comparable.
That's what I mean, where it's like this has happened very few times like in NFL history where you have just essentially all these Hall of Fame talent on an offense, and then you throw in the fact that Andy Reid is, again, probably the greatest offensive mind of all time.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes is probably the most. I get if nobody wants to say he's the best right now because Brady's got six.
He's had the best first 36 games or
and
whatever
I think
of
he's
all
the
time.
Most talented quarterback of all time. I think that probably. I think he's just won that conversation. Well, and now they have a tight end who might be biting for the best tight end of all time. Like, it's wild having all this Hall of Fame talent just kind of end up. And again, Mahomes would be great without all of it. But
right.
When you get it all together, it's special.
And it's 41 career games for Mahomes regular season and 5 postseason games.
And the odds of it happening, I mean, it, at best, it probably happens once every 15 years. And again, and even then, again, like the Rams had Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Kurt Warner. Those are 4 Hall of Famers. But even again, Mahomes is, and this is like Kurt Warner's amazing.
Yeah.
Mahomes is at a different level.
Not even close. Yeah. And again, if you don't want to say Patrick Mahomes is going to be the best quarterback of all time, that's fine. He's had the best first 50 games of all time, though. I mean, that's true. And so I don't feel like we're doing some form of malpractice by not starting with the defense, because here's the one other element of it. And then we'll take a break. We'll talk about the defense. This is repeatable. The conversation here isn't, wow, the Chiefs got lucky and they maximized their opportunity. We did see them overcome double-digit deficits in all 3 of their playoff games. And we've seen them time and time again need Patrick Mahomes to do something bonkers on 4th and 9 against the Ravens or whatever. And he does. And the offense does. Where it's not a series of flukes or a series of good luck. It's what they are. And it's remarkable. And it should totally transform the way that we talk about and look at and appreciate everything they're doing in this sport. And it's because it's just fun. And there's plenty of show, there's plenty of airtime, there's plenty of blog posts and column inches to talk about all the things that concern us about the Chiefs defense. And if they perform like they do against the Raiders in the playoffs several times over, will they eventually lose one of those games? I mean, probably. They're 9-1 this year, and they're whatever and won in the last year. So it hasn't really hurt them that often, once to be precise. And would you like it to be better? Sure. Should we talk about how it's going to be better? Sure. I just think maybe the worst thing we can do is to gloss over the fact that the one thing that I never really... I kind of think that, you know, in the next 50 years, most NFL teams are going to win a Super Bowl, because just crazy stuff happens. And, you know, you get... Even though it's really hard, the Joe Flacco on a rookie deal can win one. Teams win championships. But having the definitive best thing in the sport to do amazing, unbelievable things at the end of games. There's rarely ever more than one of those on the planet at a time. And if there's two, if you have Brady and Peyton Manning at a high level at the same time, great. But statistically speaking, your team doesn't have one. And right now, the Chiefs do. I think that's good. That being said, we'll come back and complain about the defense.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
By the way, this is not shade to anyone on the planet, because I haven't listened to any voice other than mine for the last 24 hours and arguably 23 years. But if you start any Chiefs conversation today, I don't care if it's a radio show or a podcast or a conversation with your friends. If you start any conversation about the Chiefs today with, man, I don't know about that defense, you have to go.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You have to launch yourself into another hemisphere. You have to jump on Patrick Mahomes' hand and let him fling you to the sun, which he can do.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Couple of things here. One, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast or on the show or not, but there's a podcast this song reminded me of. That's the instrumental track of 3005 by Childish Gambino. Spotify has a podcast series called Dissect that they've been going track by track through because the internet in this season. I'm not even through the whole thing because I kind of like save it for when I really want to listen to it. It's a great podcast. It's a great podcast idea because the internet is a great project. With the album and the screenplay and the short film and it's great. Fully recommend that podcast. Also, another reminder, you can watch the show on the Sports Radio 810 Facebook page. Every night we got a show, we'll be on Facebook. We've got all that equipment figured out again. And we can answer questions like this one from JD. Green bean casserole, yay or nay? Rudy, you got a face.
I'm not a big casserole fan typically. I love green beans. Green bean casserole just doesn't really do it for me. I don't know why.
Tell me about the bean inside the casserole in your mind. You think green bean casserole, what is underneath that layer of hopefully crispy onions?
And see, that's what does it for me.
Like
I don't
onions.
Like onions.
You don't like onions.
That's the thing that does it for me.
Here's my take. And it's going to be a little bit of a spoiler alert because later, whenever Beards is here, we're going to do a Thanksgiving food, build your own team with $20 kind of thing. Green bean casserole, number one seed. Thanksgiving side dish. One of the four number one seeds, absolutely. It might be my 1-1.
Yeah, so like, I can't disagree with that. And like, for you, and I think for the vast majority of people in the world, this comparison will not be good. But just, it works for me because, again, my disdain of onions. The green bean casserole is like Virginia basketball for me. You may not like it. It may sometimes be ugly, but it's undeniably one of the best, right? Now, again, that only really works for me because of my disdain for onions.
I kind of think that's turkey. I kind of think that's turkey, where everyone acknowledges at least a little bit. It's not that great, but it gets the job done.
But for side dishes, I guess we're just talking about the side. And again, I admit this will really only probably applies to me who just doesn't like onions. But I can recognize that it truly
you don't like a crispy
best.
Onion topping
I hate
thing.
Onions in all
they're
forms.
They're not really oniony.
I hate it in all forms. But, like, I can recognize its greatness in terms of how popular it is among, you know, the general public. So, like, I would never argue that it's, like I would put it as a one seed, even though I
You want
it
bounced in the first round UMBC.
Absolutely.
Yeah. By, like, raw cranberries. I don't know. I don't know what the 16 seed would be.
Yeah, I'm not for sure either.
I don't really know what that would end up being.
Leftover candy corn that your grandma just brought out because she just still had a bunch left over from Halloween.
All right, well, let's put a pin in this conversation until Beards gets here. Let's remind ourselves where we just left off, which was debating Thanksgiving side dishes and comparing them to candy corn. That's where we're leaving this. I don't think I had any candy corn during the Halloween season whatsoever. I definitely didn't.
There was a bunch here, and I know it's not good, but if I see candy corn, I can't not eat candy corn. I know it's not good. I know it's a bad candy, but yet it's like, it's just one of those things that you eat, right? Like, I don't know. So, like, I'll never buy it, but like somebody bought a big bag of it here.
Yeah.
And I just found myself every now and then walking by if I went to the kitchen, just grabbing a handful. I was like, here we go.
All right, I want to talk about the Chiefs defense. Do me a favor, Rudy. Mark right there and keep the last like 30 seconds or a minute or so. I want to play it back for Beards in 15 minutes so he knows where we left off. Because I do want to take that energy. So we're literally just going to copy it and play it back just from that back the last minute. We'll bring that back in 15 minutes. Here's a couple things on the Chiefs defense, which is a segue that I shouldn't feel forced to do, but I just know how the next hour is going to go. I was definitely disappointed by where the Chiefs defense left us all on Sunday. I think they were disappointed. I mean, I know they were. I think Tyrann Mathieu tweeted verbatim that he was upset or disappointed or something like that. Some negative word. It was bad. And part of it was Derek Carr being really good. Even whenever the Chiefs did get pressure, he got rid of it. From two plays that we already referenced in the first segment, we went, oh, there were actually a couple times where he did get pressure, and he made two great plays. That, you know what? Good on him. But beyond that, the Chiefs' pass defense was a problem. The running defense was great, by the way. I get really tired of ever being forced to talk about run defense because of how little it almost always moves the needle.
So the defense was amazing.
The defense was great yesterday, Sunday, yeah. Yeah, the Raiders ran the ball 26 times for 89 yards. That's 3.4 yards per carry.
I didn't watch the game. I assume the Chiefs won by 30.
They also won time of possession, so yes. Yes, the Chiefs won the two most important stats, which was rushing yards. They won 4.0 to 3.4 and time of possession. Doesn't really matter to me, you know, that if they would have just kneeled out the clock at the end down three, they would have won in my heart, you know, as long as it didn't hurt their rushing average too much. Which, by the way, I happen to know that Patrick Mahomes' rushing over-under in that game was 17.5. He's gone over a lot this year. I've talked about this with people that have like been like, that seems like, is this an easy bet every week? It's like, yeah, pretty much. Patrick Mahomes' over-under rushing against the Raiders was 17.5. And whenever Travis Kelce caught that touchdown, he had 18. And then he took two knees and ended the game with 16. That's a bad beat. That is a tough beat. However, I also happen to know Derek Carr had an interception over under of 0.5, and he threw one trying to force something at the very end of the game. That's a good beat, or a bad beat if you took the under. Happened to know both of those as things were ending and thought, you know, there's some, I hope at the very least no one was on the wrong side of both of those. If you had Carr no picks, Mahomes over 17.5, you got to just take this week off. You go have some orange slices and kind of recalibrate. But the Chiefs defense through the air was rough. And it was visibly rough in a way that I really don't think will come through in any of the box scores, pick or not, from Carr. The difference between the first time they matched up and Sunday night was back in week 5, there were bombs away. And it wasn't like 8 of them, but it was like, I think 5 of the Chiefs' most explosive plays allowed all came from the Raiders. On Sunday night, it was a lot more of Darren Waller dominating Dan Sorensen, or a couple times running through or around Tyrann Mathieu. It was more Nelson Agholor getting open against that secondary. And there wasn't any, you know, huge Henry Ruggs shot to have to deal with. Agholor caught 6 passes. Waller caught 7. No one else on the team caught more than 2. In fact, Hunter Renfrow had 2. No one else had more than 1. But like 8 guys caught a pass. It just never felt like it was really in terrible danger of not working, which is a really, really tough way to try to win a football game. And we'll talk about this more with Seth in a little bit. I know he's been looking at the Chiefs' pass rush. There was a stat that I absolutely had open, and then I may have closed it within the last several hours. Nope, I have it still, actually. Because we actually talked about the Chiefs' pass rush a little bit, either before or after the Panthers game. And we had talked about how, obviously, you know, with Chris Jones and Frank Clark making a lot of money in that front four, and then even then, I tweeted this during the game, Alex Okafor, nice little bit of money for your, you know, third pass rusher. A lot of draft picks in a second rounder in Derek Nnadi, a third rounder in Colin Saunders, who's actually not playing right now. Tano Passanio, a second rounder at the other defensive end spot, if it's not going to be Okafor. A lot of draft capital and a lot of money has been in that defensive line. And that obviously doesn't guarantee production, but it makes you expect a little more from it because the Chiefs have shown you they expect a little more because they've spent picks and effort on those guys. I mean, Breland Speaks isn't on the team, obviously, but he was a second-round pick. I mean, you can just... They've put a ton of emphasis there over the last several years, and especially with Spags. We'd had that conversation 2 years ago, you know, about, hey, how should the team be constructing their defense? And a lot of the advanced metrics have shown that having great coverage corner play and defensive back play is typically more indicative of if your defense is good or not. It's easier to have a good pass rush in a bad defense than have good coverage in a bad defense, essentially. I won't get all the way into the weeds on it, but that's sort of more or less it. The Chiefs went the other way, and that's fine, especially when you have Chris Jones. You should pay him and keep him and then make your philosophy work around keeping Chris Jones. But they went out and they traded for Frank Clark and gave him a lot of money. And he's been underwhelming this year. He's said just about as much. But he's had a moment or two where you go like, ah, yeah, there's Frank Clark. And a whole lot of quiet, long stretches. And defensive ends and edge rushers can have that happen. But you would like for your elite ones to be bothering the quarterback pretty much off and on all game and to get home at least a few times. And Clark didn't against the Raiders. I think Chris Jones was a little more effective, but didn't single-handedly consume a play like we've grown to expect him to. And I think, you know, the Raiders specifically have done a good job of giving Carr time. That offensive line is really good, and they had a lot of stuff that got open very quickly. So we can talk about the secondary more in a minute. But I went and looked to see where the Chiefs ranked in pressure rate, because I was pretty sure they were not great in terms of sacks, and that's true. They're in the bottom third of the league, right around there with 19 sacks this year. But in pressure rate, they are, I believe this is 7th in pressure percentage this year. Steelers, Patriots, Broncos, Eagles, Ravens, football team, Saints, Chiefs. 8th, actually. 8th in pressure rate. And you go, well, that's actually pretty good. Why are we having this conversation? Well, they're 6th in blitz percentage. Which at least kind of makes you go, right? With the front four that they put out there, with the what they've invested in their pass rushers across that defensive line, you would hope that the Chiefs would be among one of those teams that wouldn't have to blitz very often and could still get a lot of pressure. That's the Eagles and the Rams. You know, they're blitzing less than about a quarter of the time, and they're still pretty high up there in sacks and in pressure percentage. The Chiefs are blitzing more, you know, by percentage than they're getting pressure. They're running out unsuccessful blitzes, but they're also not getting there without the blitz nearly as often as you would like for them to be, considering who they've got. And I'm at a point of like, I don't know what to do about it. I don't think panicking does any good, but that's something that I think we have to take at least a little bit of a look at. One other thing we have to take a little bit of a look at is happening a little bit farther back in the secondary. We'll do that whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Beards is here. He'll be on mic starting next hour. I know he's here because he walked in firing off some sort of hot take that I had to interrupt because the music was playing. Hasn't missed a beat, this Beards McFly. He's going to eat a Sonic pretzel while I talk about the Chiefs secondary, and we'll have a good Thanksgiving couple of segments and sad fans on Reddit on the other side of the next break. But we're going to go long in the first hour because I got a couple more Chiefs things to say. I've talked about the pass rush and whatnot. And the secondary was also not good against the Raiders. And totally arguable that it was the bigger issue defensively. If you can't trust your pass rush to disrupt the quarterback so quickly that it makes everything move in double time, and your secondary really needs to be able to hold on for longer than the Chiefs were on Sunday night. And frankly, again, that's just how the team was constructed. So I don't think it's a problem. Even if you think the secondary was a bigger issue than the pass rush was, I think it's totally fair to start with the pass rush in the conversation because that's where the Chiefs started in their team building. So noting that there's a distinction you can make there. Dan Sorensen was terrible until he got the game-winning pick. I said this on Times Ours already, but I'll say it again now. Dan Sorensen is Ed Reed in the fourth quarter and Ed Sheeran in the first three. Like, it just doesn't make any sense, but it happens.
So just always good.
He's just always great. Yeah, that's right. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. I tweeted mid-game, an hour before the pick happened, I tweeted, Dan Sorensen's been awful, and I've tweeted about it, so his game-winning pick six should be coming any minute now. It wasn't a pick six, but I was close, man. I was close. But one thing among the secondary that's really interesting that I don't think we'll hear from Spags. We actually could hear from him tomorrow. There's no pressure on Thursday.
Friday.
So we probably hear from him Friday.
Friday.
Okay,
yes.
Good. That makes sense. So it's going to be a while before we hear from Spags. Andy Reid barely really touched on this. He was asked about it. But real quick on Juan Thornhill here. He played 64% of the snaps in week one, which makes sense. He's coming back from an ACL injury. You want to bring him back slowly or whatever. And when Andy Reid was asked about Juan Thornhill, in the post game, he said they want to bring him along slowly, and said that he's in a part time role or what, I can't remember what the actual phrase was, but he's a situational player, I think it was. It can't be both of those. He can't be situational and be getting worked back. That doesn't really make sense, but whatever. Weeks two through six, Thornhill played almost every single snap. 99% of them, 100%, 97%, 99%, 100%. And then starting in the Denver game, 68%, 84%, 81% in the next three. Dan Sorensen was getting more work. Thornhill was getting a little bit less. They ran a lot of free safety stuff, though. So even in those games, I thought it was a little weird, but figured it was probably fine. Sunday night, Juan Thornhill played 11 defensive snaps. He also played 4 special team snaps, which might be the biggest red flag to me. Not that you can't play both defense and special teams and be impactful, but the idea that they're trying to, watch his knee or whatever doesn't really jive with, hey, why don't you also go take 4 special team snaps? I don't know if it was a Darren Waller matchup thing, which, by the way, neither Dan Sorensen nor Tano Passanio were great matchups for Darren Waller in coverage. It's hard to find great matchups for Darren Waller in coverage. He's very good. But if there was a thought of Dan Sorensen's better for this matchup for some reason, I guess I can at least hear that out. But 11 snaps from Juan Thornhill doesn't make sense. Especially noting that the Raiders were good over the top, especially last matchup. And this is something that Seth mentioned on Times Ours. We'll talk about it again here in an hour. But so Thornhill wasn't the reason they were getting beaten over the top against the Raiders. That's a non-starter. And I think having him back there in that free safety role, which they've been putting Sorensen in a lot lately, makes the defense instantly better. And I do not have an answer for it, but I think it's really interesting. And the one thing that I do feel pretty confident in is saying that a mid-year break for him to try to make sure he's coming back at full speed and whatever, doing that after playing almost every snap from weeks 2 through 6 just doesn't really make sense. He's not a running back. You're not trying to save his legs for the playoffs, I don't think. And he fell off a cliff on Sunday night. 19% of the snaps where he hadn't played fewer than 97 through that chunk early in the year. And then even then, 68, 84, 81. It's all very strange. We've gone over, while I've been nervous about what's going on in that Chiefs backfield defensively, we'll talk about it more with Seth Kaiser, but we'll talk about some Thanksgiving things on the other side of the break. Beards is here. We've got a taste test. We've got sad fans on Reddit. We've got Thanksgiving, build your own team. We'll do all of that over the course of the next hour, starting whenever we come back.